Hey, Susan.
What
race or anything?
Well, I'm getting better, so
I'm
wearing this thing. Hopefully, it's not out today. You feel better?
Means hello.
I don't know who you're doing it to.
You.
Me? Oh.
Yeah, you like the eye.
She's warning me, y'all. Okay.
Everyone say hello, Karen. See, where are we? Randy, would you say a prayer?
Sure. Father God Almighty, we're just thankful for this time you've allowed us to come assemble here in this class and study your word. We just pray that you help us to understand your will for us. Be with Daniel and help him to remember the things he's prepared and realize the responsibility he has in presenting your word. We just pray, Lord, you continue to be with this congregation. Help us to grow. Help us to be unified. We just pray that you'd be with those who are sick and afflicted this time. You'd watch over them. There's always people that we need to pray for within our group. Continue to be with Joyce, watch over her. We just ask you, dear Lord, you be merciful to us when we fall short. We know that we sin. Just pray that we can truly be sorry and receive forgiveness from you. We pray that you continue to be with our nation, our country. Continue to watch over the elected officials and help them to guide this country in accordance with your will. Pray that you take COVID away so that it doesn't continue to be a stumbling block in so many areas, in Jesus' name.
Okay. Wednesday night, we started looking at the Promised Land. Here we go. There. And we pretty much didn't leave this slide, even though there was like seven other slides to go. So we're going to finish this part today. And we talked on Wednesday about the people of the land and, well, just the promised land in general. We just looked at the promises of it, why it was the promised land, what made it so special, why God, Deuteronomy, what was it? I forget what verse it was now. One of the chapters in Deuteronomy said about how, I think it's chapter 11, how God has his eyes on the land continually. He keeps his eyes on it, and how the nations were being spit out because they defiled it. And ultimately, we saw that the idea of the promised land, regardless of what it was supposed to be to Israel and what it was to God in the Old Testament, that it was meant to teach us about the true promised land, heaven, but also the church, the kingdom. So it's, we didn't get into the rest of that, how the church is kind of a partial fulfillment of the kingdom and the in eternity, but it is definitely a part of that. So today we want to look at the people of the land. Let's look at Genesis 15. We want to look at who they were, not a lot, but a little bit, but more specifically why they were being expelled from the land, why the land was spewing them out. Genesis 15, and let's read verses 12 through 21.
The sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country, not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated for a hundred years. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure." When the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with a blazing torch appeared and half between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, "To your descendants I give this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Cadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, oh boy, all those
ites. Sorry. So these are the nations that he talked about. Kenite, Kenizzite, Cadmonite, Hittite, Perizzite, Rephaim, Amorite, Canaanite, Girgashite, Jebusite. See, it's not that hard. Yeah. Those of you in the Genesis class, how many times did I just read over the names? I just read over the name. So we have 10, was it 10 nations there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, 10. But notice in verse 16, only one nation is specified. Which nation is that? Amorites. Now, I didn't think about, and now I'm really glad because that could have really gone away. Going back to Genesis 10 and trying to find the Amorite, who they're descendants of. Most likely, all these nations are descendants of who? Which are the three sons of Noah? The three sons of Noah. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So the Canaanites are, we know most of them are descendants of one son. Who would that be? Who is cursed? Oh, does no one know that story? Oh, man. Okay, Genesis 9. Genesis 9, 18 through 29.
Now the sons of Noah, who came out of the ark, were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham was the father of Canaan. Three were the sons of Noah, and from these the whole earth was populated. Then Noah began farming and planted a vineyard, and he drank of the wine and became drunk and uncovered himself inside his tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it both up on their shoulders and walked backward and covered the nakedness of their father and their faces were turned away, so they did not see their father's nakedness. When Noah awoke from his wine, he knew what his youngest son had done to him. And he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants, he shall be to his brothers." He also said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth, and let his dwelling in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant." Noah lived 350 years after the flood, so all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died.
So who was cursed? Yeah. I heard Canaan, and I heard Ham. Which, who was cursed?
Ham.
Yes. Yeah, Ham was the one that sinned, but it looks as if Canaan had some part in it. We don't know what it is. Canaan is the one who's actually cursed, but it's really Ham who is held accountable, even though it's Canaan and his descendants. And since we're here, let's read. Let's see. We have Genesis 10, verse 6 says, "The sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan." And we skip down to verse 15. Someone read verses. I'll just do it. "Canaan became the father of Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, and the Jebusite, and the Amorite, and the Girgashite, and the Hivite, and the Arkite, and the Sinite, and the Arvadite, and the Zemarite, and see, and the Hamathite. And afterward, the families of the Canaanite were spread abroad. The territory of the Canaanite extended from Sidon as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza, as you go toward Sodom and Gomorrah and Adma and Zeboim, as far as Lasha. These are the sons of Ham, according to their families, according to their languages, by their lands, by their nations." 1, 2, 3, 4. So this is the description of their territory. And these are all sons of Ham. Now, there were some familiar names in there from Genesis 15, right? Okay, good. Specifically, verse 16, the Jebusite, the Amorite, and the Girgashite. There were other nations. You know, a lot of time passes between Genesis 10 and Genesis 15. So maybe some of these nations don't exist anymore, and other nations take their place. We don't know. There's a lot. I mean, we know, like, see all the hairs on my head? You pull one out, that's how much we know about the reality of history compared to what the rest of history has lost. We know so little about the real history of the world. I mean, so many people. Anyway, the point is that there's all these nations that came from Canaan, and they're cursed. And just as a side note, turn to Genesis 24. Remember that this is told to Abram. He's around 75 or 80 years old when Genesis 15 happens, maybe 90, I forget what exactly now. But here's Abram, like 125, 130 now. So he's very old in Genesis 24. And let's read verses 1 through 4, some of them, please.
"Now Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all that he had, "Please put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. But you shall go to my country and to my family and take a wife for my son Isaac."
So he doesn't want his son Isaac, and who is Isaac again? Aside from the son of Abraham, like, what's special about him?
He's Sarah's also.
Sarah's also, which makes him
promise.
The promised son. Not the other one, whose name was Ishmael, but Isaac. So don't take a son, a wife for Isaac from who?
Canaanites.
The first people. Don't take a wife for my son from the cursed people. They're cursed. It's not just Canaan who's cursed. All these descendants of Canaan are cursed. Not only that, even if you don't have Genesis 9 to tell you that, what does God tell Abram's going to happen to all these people? He's going to wipe them out. It might be 400 years down the road still, but he's still going to wipe them out. And why is God going to wipe them out?
Because they're not worshiping him.
Sin. their wickedness. There it's now the Amorites. So we know they come from Canaan. So we know that. Why they're singled out, I don't know. But they become singled out and they become one of the peoples that are kind of mentioned a few times here and there throughout Joshua, Judges, etc. Though they end up disappearing over time, they still show up every once in a while. So we have the curses upon them. We have from Genesis 9, we have the prophecy of their destruction from Genesis 15. Don't marry them. And what are Israel told in Deuteronomy over and over again with the people they're about to go in and wipe out? Don't marry them. Don't give your daughters to their sons. Don't give your sons to their daughters. And vice versa. Don't do it. Number one, you're supposed to go and wipe them out. But what was the main reason why? What did God tell them? It's not because you're going to wipe them out. What was God's reasons for don't mix intermarry with them? They'll take you and your children away from me. So Abraham probably got that. Living in the land, he saw what happened to Lot. What happened to Lot? What happened to Lot? Abram and Lot fight. And they would do what?
Separate.
They separate. And what happens from there to Lot? Where did he go? Sodom. What happens to Sodom? What happens to Lot as the destruction of Sodom comes?
He has to flee, but he loses his wife.
He has to flee, he loses his wife. We don't know that Lot is married before he goes to Sodom, but we know he's married after he goes to Sodom. It's more than likely, based on how the people respond to Lot, is that Lot's been there for some time. So his daughters are likely raised in Sodom, which helps to explain their behavior after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So Abram sees, and by the way, where was Abram in all that? Abraham.
Outside.
He was where?
On the outside.
Yeah, but doing what?
Raising his own family, right?
Yeah,
but where was he as Sodom is being destroyed? And yeah, where is he? Yeah, doing what?
Watching.
Why?
He just talked to the angel.
He could have gone there. But he
what? Say it again, Solomon?
He had a conversation with the angel and tried to negotiate. The angel was going on to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah.
God took him to Sodom and said, look, I'm going to destroy this city. And Abraham says, far be it, Lord. There's righteous people in there. And the Lord says, show me some. Well, if there's this many, you'll spare, right? Yeah, if there's that many, I'll spare. Well, what if there's this many? And that's where Abraham is. Abraham is nearby, seeing. He sees not just Sodom, but Gomorrah and Adma and Zeboim and a few other. And there was a whole section of cities that were destroyed along with Sodom and Gomorrah because of their wickedness. Abraham sees all of that and says, don't let my son marry any of these people. Don't let him marry any of these people. Go back to my people, who, by the way, are also idolaters. Remember that from Joshua? Abraham came out of Ur of the Chaldeans as an idolater, became a non-idolater. He'd rather go back to those people. They at least have some wits about them, apparently, and have him marry one of them. And so that's what. And then Isaac repeats that pattern because Isaac has how many sons?
Two.
Two. And their names are?
Esau and Jacob.
And who does Esau marry? Married a Hittite. He marries another woman from somewhere in the land. But Isaac, well, actually, it wasn't Isaac, it was Rebekah. Oh, flee from your brother, because his brother wants to kill him because he stole a blessing, right? Where does Jacob flee? He goes back to Mesopotamia and marries from the family of Abraham, from the same family that his father, Isaac, marries into. Rebecca's from that same family, and Isaac marries another one of those daughters. So it's just a lot. God doesn't just wake up one day and says, go, hey, why don't you go and destroy these people? Like, this has been happening, been going on for hundreds of years, thousands of years, potentially, back to the flood or post-flood. So now we have that. Where's my slide number? So we go to the next slide. Okay, so we have the 10 nations over here. So this list here, let's go to Deuteronomy 7. So Deuteronomy is the last ditch teachings of Moses to prepare the people to go in and do what God prophesied 400 years earlier, going to wipe these people out. Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 1 and 2.
When the Lord your God brings you into the land you are entering to possess and drives out before you many nations, the Hittites, the Girgashites, Amorites, Kenites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, seven nations larger and stronger than you.
He messed up. It's two syllables.
No?
Yeah, it's fine. So there, only seven nations are mentioned. And if you notice, there are one, two, three missing. The Kenizzite, the Kamanite, and the Rephaim. Oh, and also the Kenite, they are missing. So four are missing from Deuteronomy 7. We're going to look at those here in a minute. But then we have another one added, the Hivites. And there's apparently this big deal about the seven nations of Deuteronomy 7. I didn't look into that because I didn't care. I was already onto this track, noticing that there was a difference in the lists and wondering why that was. So we're going to take a few minutes to look at that. And let's just go ahead and read verses 2 through 6 to finish that section off.
When the Lord your God has delivered them over to you and you have defeated them, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them and show them no mercy. Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons. For they will turn your children away from following me to serve other gods. And the Lord's anger burn against you and will quickly destroy you. This is what you are to do to them. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, cut down their Asherah poles, and burn their idols in the fire. For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession.
Okay, so here we have a restating of something that's been Israel's been told at least a couple times back in Genesis, and it's been repeated several times in Leviticus and Numbers, and now Deuteronomy. They've even fought with some. In fact, Deuteronomy basically starts with recounting their battles and destruct and taking out basically the Rephaim. Who are the Rephaim? Anyone remember? People like Randy and Tim. Except exaggerated, even more so. Giants. Yeah. Really big, tall people.
Man, I thought you were going to say good-looking.
So let's look at, let me use this one because that's marked better. Deuteronomy chapter 1. I'm trying to remember right now. Because I didn't think to write that down. Oh, it's not Deuteronomy 1. It's Deuteronomy 2. Got a couple of choices here. Let's do 20 through 23.
Chapter 2?
Yes, Deuteronomy 2, 20 through 23.
It is also regarded as the land of Rephaim, for Rephaim formerly lived in it, but the Amorites called them Damzumim, a people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim. But the Lord destroyed them before them, and they disposed them and settled in their place, just as he did for the sons of Esau, who lived in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites and before them. They disposed of them and settled in the place to this day.
So there's a lot of nations there that's like, who? Have fun looking into that. We're not going to do that today. The point is that the Rephaim used to live in the land, and part of the reason why they used to live in the land is because the Israelites have already kind of taken them out. If you read through Deuteronomy, you might have seen the names Og, king of Bashan. That's right near there in chapter 3. We're not going to read through chapter 3. But verse 1, we turned up the road to Bashan, and Og, king of Bashan, with all the people came out to meet us in battle Edrei. He's the one who's described as being the giant. Like his bed was like 11 feet or 12 feet tall, and it was like 8 feet wide or something like that. And then in verse 8 of chapter 3, it even says, thus we took the land at that time from the hand of the two kings of the Amorites. So there's the people. Who've already been kind of taken care of, who are beyond the Jordan from the Valley of Arnon to Mount Hermon, Sidonians call Hermon, blah, 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 blah. So there's a lot of history that happens that we could go back to Numbers and see. I think we kind of already did that. I'm trying to remember. But anyway, we're not going to do that today. So in a lot of ways, the Rephaim, the Amorites are sort of taken care of, but there's more Amorites to go. There's a lot of Amorites. There are a lot of Canaanites. There are a lot of Hittites. We want to start off, though, let me get my notes page back up here, and we're going to talk about the Kenites first. Let's go to Numbers 24. The nice thing about living in the age that we do with computers and stuff is we can just type in a word into our favorite Bible search engine, and there's like 100 of them just in English. And so you choose your favorite one, you punch in Kenite, and you can find everywhere in the Bible, the word Kenite appears. It doesn't show necessarily all they're talked about, but at least every verse the word is shown. So Numbers, where'd my thing go? There it is, 24. And Tim, what's Numbers 24 about?
Hold on, let me get there.
And I'm actually stalling because I didn't write the verse number down for some stupid reason.
The king's name now. The king wanted to destroy Israel, and he went to get Balak's help. And
Balak was the king. Balaam was the prophet. Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Balaam was the prophet. Balaam told him, he basically said, you better not go up against them, but then came up with a plan of, hey, here's a better idea. And they intermingled with the wrong women.
Yeah. And so part of the plan, and this is kind of before that, is Balaam's being hired as a prophet to curse Israel. And that's where the whole thing with the donkey comes in, is Balaam's on his way to curse Israel because he wants to get the moolah for cursing Israel. And the angel of the Lord says, no, I'm going to wipe this guy out. The donkey tries to save him. And the angel says, you will prophesy what you're told to prophesy. So Numbers 24 is Balaam wanting desperately to curse Israel because he gets the moolah, but he can't because he's been told, if you do say anything other than what you've been told, you're going to be killed. So Numbers 24 is him, instead of cursing Israel, cursing the nations around. And it just so happens in verses 21 to 22 is the Kenites. He looked at the Kenite, or Numbers 24, verse 21, looked at the Kenite, and took up his discourse and said, your dwelling place is enduring, and your nest is set in the cliff. Nevertheless, Cain will be consumed. How long will Asher keep you captive? So a lot of prophecies in the Old Testament are very, very vague. There's a couple of things that we can take from that, though, is that, number one, the Kenites are going to, the dwelling place is enduring. Yet, Cain, and at least my Bible spelled K-A-I-N.
Yeah, so is mine.
Maybe C-A-I-N? It's just spelled different in Hebrew at this time, and which would end up being Canaan. I don't know, but Cain will be consumed, or maybe Cain is just another way of saying Kenite, the descendant of this K-A-I-N, whoever that was. However, so we have this prophecy against them, not only in Genesis 15, but Numbers 24. But then we have something very interesting about the Kenites in Judges chapter 1. Judges 1, Judges 1. Remember, these are people who have been prophesied they're going to be wiped out. Judges 1, and let's see. I think it was just verse 16. Yes, just verse 16.
Now, the children of the Kenites, Moses' father-in-law, went up from the city of Palms with the children of Judah into the wilderness of Judah, which lies in the south near Ered, and they went and dwelt among the people.
Who again? Who's this verse say? It's talking about?
The children of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law.
Who's Moses' father-in-law?
Jethro.
But in Exodus, what is he? How is he usually described? Is he described as a Kenite? What's his job? What's his role among his people?
A priest
of what people? How is he Moses' father-in-law?
Mary's
her. What's that, Paul?
Moses took a wife. From Jacob.
Yeah, why?
Because Moses freed from Egypt. He needed to hunt, looking for a place to hide. So he went there and he saw those.
What? Keep going. Yeah, we're getting there. Keep going.
So he was a shepherd, right?
Who was a shepherd?
Moses.
Jethro.
Jethro, yeah.
Right. Because Moses' job is tending Jethro's sheep.
Yeah.
But what was Jethro's other role? Who's he introduced to us as?
Priest.
A priest of who? The Midianites. But here in Judges, he's called a Kenite. 1, 2, 3, 4. I didn't number my slides. Oh, I'm looking. That's the wrong one. 4, 5, 6. So Midian is way down here. But the Kenites are to be destroyed. They're in this area here. Remember that previous map? Oops. Oh, come on. There. Kenites. But Midian is like way down here. Now, one thing I have learned is like the Hittites, their main capital is like up here. But the Hittites lived all over the place. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility that the Kenites and other nations didn't just find a single place. Like, I'm in Nevada and I stay in Nevada. No, people move, right? How many of us are not from Nevada? Right? That's the point, is just because Jethro, and or at least his descendants are called Kenites, doesn't necessarily mean he's a part of this people. Because God, as they're wandering the wilderness, Tim, in teaching through Numbers, who was one of the nations they were specifically told not to go to war against?
The Midianites.
Even though they may at least somehow be related to one of the nations that was supposed to be destroyed. And there, the Kenites are mentioned one other big time. There's a man named Haber and his wife, Jael, in chapter 4 of Judges, who do some really cool thing in helping Israel. Forget exactly what now. They're called Kenites. And then also some cities of the Kenites in 1 Samuel. But we have apparently at least a couple different groups of Kenites, of which at least Jethro may have been. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. All right, so then we have not just, where's my thing? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5. So we have not just the Kenite, the Kenizzite. And it looks pretty close, right? But they're different people. The Kenizzite, let's go to Numbers 32. Let's see. Numbers 32 is the sons of Reuben and Gad, and I think half the tribe of Manasseh, asking for or taking, I forget what, maybe Tim can help with that, taking the east side of the Jordan. I think they're asking for it in Numbers 32.
Yeah, they had taken it and they're like, why don't we just stay here?
Right, and the people are like, no, you need to come to war with the rest of us. Yeah. Right, so there's some issue with that. So in this context, number 32, with that situation, we have verses 11 and 12. Someone please read that.
None of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, for they did not follow me fully, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have followed the Lord fully.
Who's Caleb of the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite?
One of the spies.
One of the spies. Is that how he's introduced to us in Numbers 13 as a Kenizzite? I'm trying to find it right now. I'm in Numbers 13. Where is Caleb? I think he, yeah, there he is. From the tribe of Judah, Caleb, son of Jephunneh. But here he is in Deuteronomy Numbers 32 being called a Kenizzite, one of the nations that was to be wiped out. So between Genesis 15 and Numbers 32, think about some history that could have had some influence on how a Kenizzite could end up being of the tribe of Judah. What happens near the end of Genesis where people end up coming into Egypt? It's a famine. A famine in the whole world, Genesis says. And for those who were in the, I think it was the Genesis study, I found there's apparently a clay or stone carving of Canaanites, and that's how it's described by atheist scholars, Canaanites migrating from Canaan into Egypt. Who else migrated from Canaan into Egypt in the Bible? The entire family of the Israelites, from Jacob all the way down to the youngest babies, they all end up moving down into Egypt. Should we be surprised to potentially find out other nations moved into Egypt during the famine? Should we also not be surprised to find out potentially Israelites intermarried with them while they're in Egypt? Let's go back to Exodus chapter 13. I think, no, it's 12. 2 or 13. 12. Exodus 12, verses 37 and 38. This is after the death of the firstborn, when Pharaoh has finally said, get out. The Egyptians have said, take our stuff and go. Exodus 12, verse 37 and 38.
Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children. A mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt.
Right there, that's good. Okay. Who else came out of Egypt with the Israelites? A mixed multitude. Not just a multitude of other people. A mixed multitude. If Genesis is accurate, which all of us should assume that it is, there was a famine in the entire world except in Egypt. People, and Genesis also says, people from all over the world came to guess where? Egypt. Should we be surprised at the Exodus that it's not just the Israelites who are coming out of Egypt, but there is a mixed multitude, a melting pot, if you will, of people, kind of like the United States, a melting pot of people from all over the world who leave their homelands to go where? To a place not where they are for various reasons. And during the time of famine, it's There's a big famine, a big, 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 big famine, ravaging the entire world, except in one place. Right? Now, I'm not equaling the United States to Egypt. Plenty of people do that, and they're wrong to do that, at least biblically speaking. But what we see is a parallel of, from a physical standpoint, of we shouldn't be surprised to find these things in the Bible, and this helps to explain. Even though you probably never noticed that Caleb is not just of the tribe of Judah, but also a Kenizzite, one of the people who's supposed to be wiped out. Because again, we go back to that list, and who's not mentioned in Deuteronomy 7? The Kenizzite. Apparently, they were already taken care of somehow while in Egypt. Now, probably there are a lot of people who stayed in Egypt. Why would this mixed multitude, why would this mixed multitude leave Egypt with the Israelites? Why? Is their God the God of the Israelites?
Probably took all their families and, you know, the Israelites when they left, and maybe they were married to some Kenizzites or...
The Israelites are probably intermarried with some of the other people, right? Who else is of a mixed racial background who is of the tribe of one of the tribes of Israel? One of the other spy who made it through the 40 years? Joshua. Who's he the son of?
None.
Son of Nun, but of what tribe? Reuben? Issachar? Dan? Joseph?
Joseph.
But where did Joseph get his children from?
Egypt.
Egypt. How? What?
He married.
He married who? A priest, an Egyptian priest's daughter. So Caleb and Joshua both are of mixed multitude backgrounds. We shouldn't be surprised to find other Israelites who are also of mixed multitude backgrounds. Okay, the Kadmonites I can only find them in Genesis 15. They're probably elsewhere in the Bible, but that's only place that I could find the specific word. They could have also gone out into Egypt with the famine and just been a part of that, intermarried, and just disappeared into history, nationally speaking. Then we have the Hivites, the new nation, a nation that was not listed in Genesis 10, 15 rather, but a new nation that is listed in Genesis Deuteronomy 7. Let's go to Joshua 9. Now, Joshua is all about what? What's the book of Joshua about? God taking over Moses, yes, but doing what? What's Joshua doing? Conquering the land. It's almost like 2 Deuteronomy, or like part 2. Like Deuteronomy is intro to Joshua, and Joshua is fulfilling what Moses is telling Israel, go and do. Wipe out the land. Genesis, Joshua 9, verses 1 through 7.
As soon as all the kings who were beyond Jordan in the hill country and the lowland along the coast of the great sea from Lebanon, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites heard of this, they gathered together as one to fight against Joshua and Israel. But when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done in Jericho and Ai, they on their part acted with cunning and went and made ready provisions and took worn out sacks for their donkeys and wineskins, worn out and torn and mended, with worn out patched sandals on their feet and worn out clothes, and all their provisions were dry and crumbly. And they went to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a distant country, so now make a covenant with us."
Pause. Don't read the next verse. Who is this? Joshua and who? Gibeonites. So here's Gibeon, city of Gibeon. Here's Jerusalem. Here's Ai. Here's Jericho. Gibeon knows they're on the list. Joshua's already crossed the Jordan and has already taken out Jericho. Well, at least God has. They've already attacked and finally conquered Ai twice. Look where Gibeon is, right? Their time is coming. But what do? We're out of here. Don't tackle us. We're please? Now read, whoever was reading, I forgot who, sorry, verse 7.
But the men of Israel said to the Hivites, perhaps you live among us, then how can we make a covenant with you?
The Hivites, that new nation from Deuteronomy 7, verse 1, that they were supposed to wipe out. Here's another example of people of the same nationality or race living in different places. There are many cities of the Hivites that we can read about in Judges 3 and 1 Kings 9, many of them. Gibeon is just one of the cities. In fact, in Joshua 11, I think it is, some people, I think other Hivites, are going against Gibeon. And the Israelites, well, I mean, we made this deal. We got to go defend them. So the Hivites end up becoming one of the mixed multitudes that become a part of Israel. Now, who knows what part, what happens, what Joshua does to the Gibeonites once he realizes they fool us. It are cousin words where? For what?
For the priests
doing what? What do the priests do as part of cutting wood and water and stuff? The sacrifice of the tabernacle. So these people who were supposed to be killed end up becoming servants in the tabernacle and eventually even get a new name. At least that's what generally is agreed upon, is that they become a people who end up coming back from exile called the Nethinim. And the Nethinim are called the temple servants. That's what these people end up becoming. So even though Israel is told, don't intermarry with these people, what ends up happening? They intermarry with all these nations. And do they end up taking away from the one true God? Yeah, repeatedly, especially in the book of Judges, Solomon is famous for having all these wives from other nations who take his heart away from the one true God. That's where these other nations come from. And now we're about out of time. So there. So now we get to, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So now on Wednesday, we'll start looking at these chapters. Chapter 4, chapter 6, chapter 7, chapter 8, chapter 12. I promise, I got nothing else designed between now and then.
I love the latter half. The first half, I was like, where are we going? And then when I got to where it was going, it has been probably.